The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, so much to talk about. I wanted to start just talking about some good news, something which I think is a very encouraging development in this world that we live in today. And that is the story that Apple is developing, is increasing its investment in a development center, which is located in the city of Rawabi. The city of Rawabi is located in the Palestinian Authority area and currently apparently employs more than 60 engineers, most of whom come from the Palestinian Authority area. And this is a joint development with Apple and with some local Palestinian businessmen who have set up this business area in the city of Rawabi. And interestingly, it comes under the responsibility of Johnny Sruji, who is officially the senior vice president of hardware technologies for Apple, and was also the person responsible for setting up the Herzliya development center, which employs a significant number of people for Apple and sits alongside its development center that's also in Haifa. Johnny Sruji is a very interesting person, was born to a Christian Arab family in Haifa, is Israeli, is an Arab Israeli, is Israel's most senior representative within the Apple Corporation. He's also been quite public. He's been involved in some of the presentations that Apple has made about new technologies on the world stage. And he is apparently a no-nonsense type of executive, and who also is very much encouraging the cooperation between Apple and the Palestinian Authority area. So I think that that's really good news.
Absolutely amazing. It really is. And you just look at this as the opposite of BDS. This is actually enriching people's lives, giving people employment, training, and so many other things.
Absolutely. And I mean, this has all been going on just since 2018. In 2018, the Sarabi Center was set up, employing, I think, 5 engineers at the time, now more than 60 engineers. And as you rightly say, this is all about taking people's energy and taking their focus and really doing positive things with it.
All right. Taking a look at some of the other stories, seems to be mixed messages coming out of the meeting in Paris yesterday between Prime Minister Yair Lapid and French President Macron. What were the mixed messages, or what were the messages?
So the first thing that's worth talking about is the way that the two of them actually embraced each other when they met. And if there is a YouTube video, I'm not sure, I saw it on Israeli TV news, and the way that Yair Lapid approached Emmanuel Macron outside the Elysee Palace in Paris. Of course, all a very formal occasion with the gendarmes all dressed up in their most ceremonial outfits. And then you see these two guys, two young people, come together and greet each other like they're old frat friends, you know, embrace each other, almost jump on each other. At one stage, I thought Yair Lapid was going to kiss Emmanuel Macron. It was all very informal. And I quite like that because the pomp and the ceremony is a little kind of, I don't know, it's a little stiff. And I just wonder to what extent it encourages true, honest interaction between the leaders. One never really knows what goes on behind closed doors, but outside it always seems to be very, very formal and a little bit stiff, and I'm not sure that I like it that much. I don't know what the listeners think about that, and if people have had the chance to perhaps look at the meeting that took place between the two of them. But when it came to talking about what went down in the meeting after the event, then it seems as if Emmanuel Macron wanted to talk about encouraging Yair Lapid to re-engage with the Palestinians in order to reach an historic peace agreement. We know that Yair Lapid in the past has spoken about that, but it's quite fascinating to understand what he's saying right now. And what he's saying right now is it's not going to happen. That's basically what he's saying, if one wants to interpret. He's of course, being much more diplomatic about the statement by saying that he has inherited a coalition government which has a lot of right-wing elements to it, and that coalition currently doesn't support the possibility of re-engaging with the Palestinians in order to try to somehow push forward with a peace discussion. So that message by Yair Lapid, I think, was as clear as anything we've heard him say up until now. What he really wanted to talk about was nothing to do with the Palestinians. He wanted to talk about Iran. He wanted to talk about people uniting behind an agreement with Iran, or perhaps uniting behind not an agreement with Iran, but somehow trying to prevent Iran from developing the nuclear weapon, which we know that they are developing behind the scenes. And that also comes on the back of some announcements, some statements that were made by the US negotiating team with Iran, who recently met in Doha in Qatar. We spoke about the fact that there were meetings that were going to take place in Qatar. We thought that there were going to be face-to-face meetings. In the end, they wound up being shuttle diplomacy, again, indirect meetings. And apparently, according to the US negotiators, the Iranians have become very brazen in presenting a whole bunch of new demands, which were never on the table before, and are, in the words of the US negotiators, a non-starter. So that's really the background.
I just don't understand. I mean, I really am a bit of a lover, not a fighter, but this is becoming ridiculous. You know, it surely there comes a time when we acknowledge that this is in Iran's best interest to keep these conversations going for as long as possible whilst they develop nuclear weapons. It's time to get rid of them, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that that's the one angle. I think that people still believe that Iran have it in their interests to somehow come to an agreement with the U.S. in order to reduce the level of sanctions that the U.S. has applied on Iran, and which is really crippling their economy. And let's just say it as it is. Let's not pretend that it's anything else. The Iranian economy is being crippled by these sanctions. And even though they are somehow finding ways around the sanctions, they're dealing with Russia, they're dealing with China, they're doing things in order to sell their oil on the international
Doesn't that indicate the genocidal nature of their existence? They're prepared to give up absolutely everything, including the welfare of their people, that is, that who are suffering tremendously, in order to further their nuclear goals. That should tell you everything you don't want to know about Iran's Iran's vision here.
Oh, you're singing to the choir. Absolutely. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's just very frustrating that somehow the international community, and in particular the U.S., don't seem to get this. Even perhaps we're not getting the U.S. Perhaps there's a reason why the U.S. somehow has to find a way to come to an agreement with Iran that we are not familiar with, maybe from an economic point of view, I don't know, because they really are doing whatever they possibly can to bend over backwards to accommodate the Iranians and to somehow come to an agreement with them. So there seems perhaps something behind the scenes that we're not familiar with. But all I can say is that the way in which the Iranian nuclear development is going right now does not bode well for Israel, for the safety of Israel. It does not bode well for the safety of the general Western world at large. I think that the actions that are being taken right now by leaders in the international community on the Iranian issue are very, very scary in terms of where this might lead in the future for next generations.
Yeah, very, very scary stuff. Conflicting reports have come out of Russia as to whether the work of the Jewish agency has been stopped or not. So I started reading this yesterday. I was seeing these reports. I thought this is a very worrying story. But what is the latest here?
Well, there are different reports. I read a very convincing article, or two, maybe even three, which were quite clear in saying that the Kremlin has sent a letter to the Jewish agency for them to stop their work that they're doing in Russia. And the reason that has been given is because the Jewish agency apparently is investigating Russians, investigating information about Russians, which the Kremlin objects to for some reason or another, and therefore has stopped the work that the Jewish agency is doing. In the words of the Russians, the Jewish agency is illegally collecting information about Russian citizens. And so that is really the one article. On the other hand, there was quite a convincing a statement that was published by the Jewish agency saying that, in fact, their work has not been stopped, that they have received a communication from the Russian government, which is in the form of some sort of a questionnaire which seems to be some sort of an audit or some sort of a check into some of their activities, but in fact their activities have not been stopped. So I don't really know what the current situation is. One thing we do know is that there seems to have been some communication from the Russian government towards the Jewish agency questioning some of the work that they're doing. Now, if one knows what the Jewish agency's work is all about, then you'll understand that this is really all about securing safe passage for Jews who wish to use this to come to Israel. That's really what the work of the Jewish agency is all about in a country like Russia and indeed elsewhere in the diaspora around the world. So if the Russians are at this point beginning to question the work of the Jewish agency, which means beginning to perhaps limit the extent to which Jews may choose to come to Israel from Russia, if that's what they wish to do, then of course that is a very, very worrying development. And it almost harks back to the days before the fall of the Berlin Wall and during the years of the Cold War, when Jews were not allowed to come from Russia, were not allowed to leave at all, and certainly not allowed to come to Israel. So it's a slightly concerning development. I don't think that we need to jump up and down quite yet to be overly concerned, but it is certainly a move in the incorrect direction, and also is a very interesting statement about where the relationship between Israel and Russia is right now against the backdrop of the Ukrainian war. We know that former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett went out of his way to do whatever he could in order not to damage the relations with Russia as far as possible, even though the general Israeli public and, of course, a strong majority of the coalition also feel that Russia really needs to be criticized. We need to somehow act in concert with the rest of the Western world against the activities that Russia is undertaking in Ukraine. But the Israeli government has been very, very cautious to tread that even balance between Russia and Ukraine. But this is certainly another step which may cause Israel to be much more critical of Russia and its war in Ukraine.
The Bank of Israel yesterday increased Israel's interest rates to 1.5%. What lies behind this increase?
Well, this is really consistent with what's going on around the world in general. We've seen interest rates increasing. Israel managed to maintain its base interest rate at 0.1% for an extended period of time. For a number of years, the interest rate was left at 0.1%. And now, in the last 6 months or so, we've seen this is now the second increase, or even the third increase in interest rates, slowly but surely increasing now by 0.5% to increase the interest rate to 1.5%. And this is really against the inflationary pressures that we've seen, not only in the Israeli economy, but indeed in the economy around the world, and it shows some consistency with what other central banks are doing in their countries. It was interesting that the governor of the Bank of Israel, Professor Amir Yaron, didn't really want to talk about where interest rates might go in the future. But there is a forecast that interest rates might be as high as 2.75% in less than a year from now, even though he wasn't willing to talk about how quickly we might get there. But I think overall that the Israeli economy is not in bad shape. We're still showing good economic growth, even though it's been cut from 5.5%, which was forecast for 2022, it's now down only to 5%, and also down from 4 to 3.5% for next year, 2023. But we are certainly feeling the inflation, and the inflation in Israel has increased. It's now being revised upward to 3% for 2022, still not at the levels that we need to be panicking, but certainly more than we've had before. So slowly but surely, we're starting to feel the squeeze, and we're expecting interest rates to increase even further before the year is out.
And finally, the leaders of Fatah and Hamas were pictured at a meeting yesterday, and that's for the first time in 6 years. That's quite something. What was the occasion?
It is quite something. I mean, obviously, a lot of rivalry between Hamas and Fatah, and a lot of that also goes back to when Hamas seized power in Gaza from under Fatah's nose. That was back, I think, in 2006 already. So that's been some time since that happened, and it's created a lot of animosity between the organizations. But yesterday, there was a photo opportunity between Ismail Saniya and Mahmoud Abbas, the two leaders of the organizations. And it looked all very tense, I have to tell you. It didn't look like it was a natural. It didn't look like Emmanuel Macron meeting with Yair Lapid and jumping on each other and being delighted to see each other. None of that sort of stuff. It was all very staged and all very tense between the two of them. But nonetheless, the Algerian president made sure that there was going to be a photo opportunity between the two leaders. The occasion was Algeria's 60th anniversary of its independence. That was obviously in Algeria. The leaders were there to celebrate along with the Algerian people and the Algerian government. And the Algerian president made sure that the two leaders met. The way they kind of behaved with each other in that meeting made it feel to me like we're not going to see another meeting between the two of them anytime soon. And certainly as long as each of them can avoid each other, they will definitely go about doing that.
Absolutely fascinating. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning, 7:45 for the Israel Report.